Blog Talk Radio.
Sherlock
Magica.
All right. Hello, everyone. Today is April the 17th, recording live from the nation's capital. This is PopGlitz Radio. I am your host, the media mogul, Giovanni Brusto, founder of PopGlitz.com, here with today's panel, Rod Clever, blogger at rodclever.com, and self-proclaimed bottomist. I'm going to have him explain the definition of that for you guys. Care to explain, Rod? I've been dying to hear you, like, actually word this
out.
You
know, it's so funny because I've been getting asked that question a lot, like, what is a bottomist? What is a bottomist? And I think, for me, being a bottom, I'm very pro-bottoms. I'm very pro, you know, healthy lifestyle for bottoms. It's like being a feminist, but it's like, I feel like we live in a society, especially as gay men, where we find so many ways to shame men who take dicks. And I'm just like, well...
Well, hopefully no one hung up after that. I'm just kidding.
Right. I just find that, you know, without bottoms, gay sex doesn't technically exist. So just like it's a necessary thing, but I think people need to be more supportive of the process and what we have to do and who we are as people instead of trying to use it to dehumanize us or make us less than men because we're on the anal receptive end of sex. But if I see a bottom, I'm going to support you. Like you're about what you need. What can I do for you? You need some tips. Need some help. what can I do to make you better at what you do? Like that's how I really feel.
So look, I just love that I was able to start off this show with that. You know what? The first 60 seconds of a show talking about anal reception. And I think that the second word in my bio is conservative. So, yeah, fun time.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. No, I asked a question. So, all right. And the second person is hopefully he will be on shortly, Mr. Ronnie Kane, an image advisor out of Miami. So, getting started. So this is the third show that I actually discussed this on to completely different responses each time. American Idol runner-up, LaPorsha Renee, was vehemently rebuked for her words describing the LGBT community as a quote-unquote lifestyle. And here was my issue that I mentioned this on Breitbart Radio. She was asked about her hometown of Mississippi's new religious freedom proposal. Which would the question is whether or not you'll be able to deny service to gays at your place of business. But the argument turned into a war of words or semantics on whether or not it's a lifestyle. We're arguing over that word, but essentially missed the entire argument of the actual legislation, which I've seen little discussed about. Oddly, among many LGBT sites.
Right.
So, Rod, what is your opinion on, A, whether or not it's offensive to call being gay a lifestyle? And secondly, I'd like to actually answer the question as to your thoughts on having this type of law and whether you can pick and choose who you're able to serve.
That LaPorsha Renee situation is beyond loaded for a multitude of reasons, but I'll tackle question number one. The word lifestyle, I think, minimizes the gay experience. I think that what I do as far as who I share myself with romantically or sexually is not a lifestyle. You being a jet setter is a lifestyle. You being a weed head is a lifestyle. You know, those are things that you chose to do or chose to interact in. But my sexual preference is not something that I chose. It's something that was, like I said in one post before, I was like, a lifestyle is not a biological predisposition. I didn't choose to be gay. This is who I am. But I almost might call what I do a lifestyle, because that means that what I do is interchangeable. Now,
right.
I did actually comment on the fact of what LaPorsha said as far as the whole comment. And my thing is, she's entitled to say what she wants, and she's entitled to feel what she feels. But people always seem to forget that just because you have freedom of speech, that freedom is always doesn't come with a cost. You can't say what you want all the time.
Oh, of course. You can say what you want, but, you know, you're not free of consequence afterwards.
Exactly. And my thing is, it's kind of funny that you say that you don't agree with the lifestyle, or I'm not saying that you support the legislature or not, but the legislature is a very slippery slope. Like, if we really want to play the biblical game, like, everybody's pretty much guilty. Because, like, let's all do the major example, the cake shop owner. You don't want to make my cakes because, let's say, me and my husband are getting married and you want to do my wedding cake. Fine. But that cake shop owner could easily turn around and say, I don't make cakes for baby showers of single mothers.
I actually, and you know what, here's my thing. Okay, laws are made by humans. We're not perfect. And I don't see that as being fair, but okay. The democratic process is what it is, all right? So if this is what you all propose and that's what you want to do, then fine. I want someone to open a business, and I, you know, I'm not allowing women with hair weaves to come in. Fair is fair. I want to see, I mean, this is what, that's the direction that I would like to see that go in. If it had an argument before about, okay, I think a pizza shop owner said the same thing, that they didn't want to service LGBT members of the community. And I said, well, how does this work? Let's say that I call in a pizza and I pay by credit card and I come outside with kissing my boyfriend in front of the driver. The driver's like, oh, I can't service you. And I'm like, oh, I already paid for it. How does this work? the little minor details involved in that. And I'll mention that Ohio Governor John Kasich, who's running for president, is a Republican who was against this. Now, he didn't really want to get into the technicalities of it. He said that he wishes that we didn't have to take this to court, that people could act civilly. But if you get into business, you're not supposed to you're in business to serve the public, and you're not supposed to pick and choose who you're going to serve. If you don't want to serve certain people, you shouldn't be in business at all.
Right.
That's what I agree with. But I feel like letting certain things play out. Now, I don't condone violence or anything, but you know, if you do something like that, and let's just say a Molotov cocktail comes flying in the window or something, I don't, you know, I'm not going to, I'm not going to cheer anybody on, but I just might go and look the other way. I mean, you kind of brought this on yourself. It's not fair on either side, but there are consequences to doing these types of things.
Exactly.
And you just make sure you're ready.
And that's the thing I really respect about John Kasich, is the fact that he's making the obvious point. We are a country built off of capitalism. All money's green. So you want to discriminate? Like, it doesn't make sense monetarily. And that may be just a Republican thing, but monetarily it doesn't make sense. Like, even if your morals and your spirituality and all of this don't agree with gay folks, that's fine. You're welcome to have it. But from a business standpoint, it doesn't make sense. Because you gonna tell me that I gotta, that, like, because of my beliefs, I'm gonna miss out on a few Washington.
And see, it's a slippery, as you said, it's a slippery slope. I mean, it started with marriage. It started with marriage, which I'm actually fine with. Like, look, okay, I'm not gonna, I don't believe in forcing someone to marry someone that they don't have to, as far as the church goes. I mean, go to another church. That's the religion. It is what it is. But as for, you know, individual establishments, that's a different story. Then there was the woman who didn't want to give the marriage certificate. You work in government, okay? You have the wrong job.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I appreciate about what Maryland did, that when they came across their whole equality thing, they made a compromise. okay? We don't give them equality, but you got to marry them at your churches. That's your choice. And I think that's fair.
So do you do or do not? Because I forgot.
You have the choice. If you want to marry them, like, you can decline them to marry at your church. But if that's what you guys are looking for, that's what you should do. But I find that since gay marriage has been passed, that everybody's trying to do ordinances or regulations or legislature to stop gay people from thriving in these places. But as we are seeing, as the jolly slippery slope that we all are sliding on right now, real businesses, not mom and pop, real corporate businesses are pulling out of these states now.
Yeah, because the bottom line is more important than that. I mean, it's those who don't know any better, who don't understand economics 101, who don't understand business, who are voluntarily shooting themselves in the foot.
Right.
So whatever negativity that happens to them, you know, they brought it on themselves. But, of course, someone has to be the test case for the big business who wants to pull out. And look what happened to Chick-fil-A. So we've already had our test tube case. And
right.
Not many other places, I seriously think, are going to want to go in that same direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a PR nightmare. And I think they eventually
changed
their mind on that.
Yeah. But
who wants to have mass protest outside of their establishment? As you said, those that matter, those who are actually making money, know better. But I say let the whole damn thing play out. That's what you all want to do.
Too.
I mean, we see businesses that are pulling out. I mean, it is what it is. I'm looking forward to the end result of this. And I wanted to piggyback on the lifestyle part. I tend to have a thick skin, and I know that we've kind of had these little debates between the both of us from time to time. And I can come across a little insensitive, so I try to be a little mindful of these things.
You know who you're talking to, so, you know, you can take me away from Sunday. So, you know.
Right, and I'm saying just, like, tone-wise, I know it can, some things can come across a bit tone-deaf, but as I said, I have thick skin, so the argument about lifestyle kind of went over my head. And it didn't really bother me because I guess we've been using the word so long and it was kind of deemed as okay for a while that it really didn't faze me that was a problem. And I said, well, it's like the ever-moving goalpost of what is and isn't offensive. And it's kind of hard trying to follow this, you know, I guess a straight person. It's like, well, what am I allowed to say? Because I hear that a lot. At what point are you all not going to be offended? Like, she's saying a word that she hears all the time, and she actually was trying to not be offensive. She was trying to be PC, and she repeatedly corrected herself. She made corrections on Twitter, which is horrible. You never do an apology on Twitter. It's like parsed by like 8 tweets. You know, it's like, oh, I got my apology out. Somebody picks tweet number 6 and then goes on like a 10-tweet argument. Then you're arguing like the one, and it just doesn't end. So
she tried.
Like, she actually, I don't think that she meant any harm. But, you know, being in that type of business from a PR standpoint, I would just kind of I would advise my client to don't say anything about the gay community. You know, they're a big buyer of music. As far as you're concerned, you love them. And if you had the chance, you would be one. Okay, like that's it. Keep your opinion to yourself. Unfortunately, you are just not in that type of business to make those types of comments.
And I agree with you completely. Even when I read the statement, I wasn't really upset about it. And even the lifestyle thing, it was one of those things where it's like it's not offensive, but it's a LGBT microaggressor, I guess you can kind of say.
Very much.
And
so, and
my thing is, I think the problem is, and I'm pretty sure you agree with me on this, that people are just like being outraged is a new trend. Like everybody's outraged about everything. And I'm trying to explain to people that when you're really pro gay or pro LGBT or pro black or whatever you're pro thing, a pro woman, my thing is that you have to respect that everybody's in a different process than you are. So my thing is that as a gay person, I don't have an issue with BL people. I don't have an issue with bisexual people as who use the N-word. I don't have an issue with people who do things that they may deem as ghetto or not classy or not appropriate, or people who do things that's anti-black by supporting white people. I don't know.
I feel the same way. You can do what you want, but I am in the business of commentary. I am in the business of commentary, so I'm going to say how I feel about it. But you can do what you want.
just be aware of who your audience is. Like, just be aware of who you're talking to. You can do whatever you want, but I'm just like, it's like where she stands versus where, you know, some of these social media bullies stand.
Okay.
You know, she has more of a platform, so you have to be a little bit cognizant of what you're saying, how things are going to come across. I don't really feel like that what she said had malicious intent. I was pissed about it briefly, but I know how simple-minded people can be in social media sometimes and the firestorm that ensues by you just speaking your mind and you being honest and you having to explain your personal thoughts. I feel like that's another problem too with social media as well sometimes, that people really want an explanation for your personal thoughts.
Of course. And I tell people, you know, my general advice is that you take your stance and you stand by it. And there's no backing down. People are going to throw all types of darts, but you make your statement, that'd be the end of it. Don't go on extensive explanations with people, because the more you explain, Ben Carson, the more that you keep going on about it, the worse that it gets. He's like the prime example. I hate hearing that man speak. You make a statement, fuck it up, and then you go fuck up the apology, you know, and fuck up the apology for the apology, you know, blame the media the entire time. No, you have to learn how to handle the media. That's not going to change, you know.
Right.
Hence being out of said presidential election. just had to throw that in there, but poor LaPortia, the girl had good intent, and I just have to, if I leave the topic alone, beating a dead horse here. Being in D.C., we're in this is the headquarters for all for all the major nonprofits and all major causes. So organizations like GLAAD, et cetera, have people who are paid 40-hour a week salaries and six figures to find an argument, to find an issue, and pick at it. And pick at it, you know, to the end of time. And that's kind of the other issue with this. It really was not that bad. But, again, if you look up some of the names, which I just don't have in front of me right now, of those who made the commentary from these organizations, that's their job. So, you know, you have, like, she's fighting a whole machine. As well, you know, press releases were done about it, radio segments, you know, and it's kind of like at the end of the day, just say, I apologize, I didn't mean it, walk away, any questions, direct them to said apology.
Right.
Look, I was up the other morning, like at 1 something in the morning, and the girl was on Facebook Live apologizing again, and I said, stop apologizing. Yes. There were already tons of articles about her apologizing. And then she's doing another apology. Why? Like, leave it alone.
I wonder, I said instantly after I saw when I first saw the article, I was like, PR manager.
But she's new. And this is the argument that Mariah Carey had against American Idol years before she went on. She said she would never do it because these people are thrusted into the spotlight and they have no training. And see, if you've worked for something for years, say, you know, 10 years or whatever, from background singer, or work your way up, by the time you get there, you're not going to make any controversial statements. You're not going to do anything stupid because you have, you know, you've got years to lose. All right, you win a competition overnight, you're just going to say whatever the hell comes to your mind.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I wasn't surprised here. No media training would have prepared her for said crash course. She probably never, I don't want to say never met with anyone, but no significant meeting, you know, what, a day or something, possibly?
Right.
In that whole competition, she just got signed, you know.
Yeah. And I understand that people need to really, what, because celebrities always seem to always come across with these blurbs and things they have to apologize for later. I just find that people, if it's not your minority group, don't talk about it. Just say next question, or like, I don't know anything about that. I don't know. Just
stay off of social media. Stay. And look, you're the one who asked me. You're the one who asked me about profanity, and I'm the one like entering my fifth F-bomb. Stay the fuck off of Twitter. Like that would be it. You should be known for your work, and not for all of these side comments, Chris Brown. Moving along.
Like,
yeah,
well,
so we discussed that on another show. It was like, Azalea Banks, who is that? She said, I've never heard Sonny Johnson, the Breitbart show. He's like, I've never heard of her music. I've only heard of her because she's trolling conservative media these days for attention. Like, she wrote a PR announcement to Sarah Palin. Why?
Right.
Go find something else to do with your life.
pretty much. And the thing is so funny is that I actually have some of Azalea Banks' music, and she's phenomenal. The girl is super talented. And I do respect the fact that you're in that arena and you're using your voice. Just, girl, we might want to hear your voice as a rapper more than as an actor.
You should always be known more for your talent than anything else. If you notice, you don't see my face plastered all over YouTube and things like that, and I get criticized for it quite a lot. Because I've just never been a huge self-promoter. I'm a writer and do media, and it was just like, I want to be known for that. I'm not an attention whore. So, it's always a struggle of finding that proper balance of how much of myself to put out there. But moving along, rapper and singer Erykah Badu, she came under fire for another Twitter rant of her own, where she spoke about the choice of clothing that young girls wear to school. And just to make sure I'm not accused of taking the words out of context, I'm going to read it verbatim.
Okay.
She said there was an article ruling that high school girls lower their skirts so male teachers are not distracted. I agreed because I'm aware we live in a sex-driven society. If I had a school, I would make sure that the uniform skirt length was a nice knee length. It's fair to everyone. So, do you have any thoughts on her statement about what girls should wear to school? Was that bad? Because I heard a lot of bad responses to that.
Okay, so a lot of the problem was that, like you said earlier, people didn't read all the tweets. And my thing is that in a series of tweets of that conversation, she tried to explain her thought more clearly. So my thing is that that one tweet, like you said before, that one tweet kind of nailed her against the wall. Now, to what she was leaning
towards. 140 characters, we'll do it every time.
Right, every time. So what my thing is that she was leaning towards creates a problem that women, it's this culture of women are being overly sexualized. And my thing is, I think the thing that's troublesome for me with the statement was the fact that we need to stop trying to curtail women to stop being a sexual thing or something or stop attracting men. We need to start teaching boys to stop raping women. That's the ultimate.
It is a two-way street. I agree. You know, like Rihanna was annoying in that car. I'm sure she probably had her. She had her Jamaican finger all in his face. No, she's not Jamaican, whatever. Where is she from?
She's Barbadian.
Okay.
There you go.
She had the Barbadian finger all up in his face, I'm certain, with the neck roll going. And, yeah, that's bad. But she also didn't have to have her face bloodied over it either. Didn't quite have to happen. So, yes, we do need to teach both sides of it, but it also is a two-sided thing. When I first saw the part about the knee-length skirts, it took me back to school where I went to Fine Arts Magnet Schools growing up, and that was the dress code, and they were pretty adamant about it. I mean, down to the fact of, I mean, I remember specifically knee-length skirts and nothing higher. And should you have something higher, you were going home. And I remember a girl being hauled out of class for having purple highlights in her hair in elementary school. And we all looked at her, you know, she was being treated like she was a drug addict or something. Like, oh, what's wrong with her that she would put that in her hair? And we were all whispering. So I guess I kind of had a relatively conservative school upbringing. I did go to regular public school just for like 2 years. But so I didn't see anything wrong with that statement. But, you know, also growing up, like I, as a teenager, like above 18, I didn't come home after 11. You know, so
right. I mean,
it's a little bit of a different perspective, I'd say.
Right, and my thing is, I understand. I didn't go to a private school; I went to public school. But comparatively, from now, I mean, I went to school for me in the '80s. I'm not talking about how old I really am. But when I was in elementary school, I never went through the whole uniform thing. I have no idea what that really that experience is about.
I did that as well.
I just feel like when we over sexualize children, and my thing is, like a girl having purple hair in school, that's ridiculous. Like, come on, that's just purple hair. But my thing is that women are held to this. It's so sad that women are just held to this sexual standard. Well, maybe because I'm gay. But I don't understand why. I'm just like, you know, just because, okay, I'll even switch it. I'll make this a whole homosexual situation. If I'm at the club and if I want to come to the club with, like, assless chaps on and a thong, and mind you, in my gay heyday back in the day, we have to go to tracks, kinds of bullshit. And I never got, like, I haven't gotten disrespect me, say crazy stuff. Just because I'm dressed provocatively does not give you the right to verbally assault me or then to physically touch me. And I'm just like, we have this culture where because how you look warrants a certain response. Now I understand if we're like you're on a job interview, you should come professionally dressed. Yes, I understand that. But if I'm out and I'm just like living my life and being me and trying to be great, I shouldn't have to be treated differently because I'm dressed a certain way. And I feel like we place this, like, it's like this virgin whore dichotomy. Like, you can't look like
what, was the, what did you call it? What did you say?
The virgin whore dichotomy. It's like, you have to be either one or the other. Like, either you got to be like completely conservative and chase looking like Alicia Curry, or you're a slut and you're a whore and you like something from One of Love and Hip Hop series. And my thing is, just because you prefer a more sexual appearance or a more revealing appearance, it does not mean you're not intelligent, you're not educated, doesn't mean nothing. Just because
Do you watch Real Housewives of Atlanta?
Yeah, I do.
And, you know, Portia Williams had just said during the reunion, she said, just because I want to twerk and shake my ass doesn't mean that I'm not intelligent. And it was kind of like a ha-ha moment in the audience watching that. You know, it's unfortunate. I agree that wearing certain things does not warrant aggressive behavior, et cetera.
Right.
You have more of a chance of said undesirable attention wearing certain things. You know, I want to say that I've been working out for a while and gained a little bit of weight, and so I don't intentionally, you know, the skinny jean phase has been in for a while. I don't intentionally buy anything small, but they've just gotten small. Like, I was getting dressed the other night, and I was like, damn it, I have to go shopping. I can't. I was like, I look like wearing a sausage casing. Like, nothing was fitting, and I did not intentionally buy anything to be really small. I just haven't been shopping in a little while, okay? And I'm retired, like, approaching half of my closet now. So now we're in the dangerous territory. Like, I feel like I don't have anything to wear. But stepping out of the door, I went to see an old neighbor of mine, and I've always been a pretty conservative dresser. I've never been really crazy with clothing. Stylish, I would like to say, but not really crazy. And I think this old neighbor had mentioned about what type of guy I was going to approach, going to attract. And
really?
I don't know if she said that I looked like a slut one day or something. And all I was wearing was a gray T-shirt and gray pants and gray jeans. That was all.
Well,
the pants might have been a little more fitting than usual.
You know, the culture of sweatpants, gray sweatpants, are the male leggings. If you walk around a pair of sweatpants, you're asking to be looked at. Come on. Come on. You wear sweatpants. I'm serious. Because I see a man in some sweatpants, I'm trying to see everything from the root to the tooth. Like, bitch, what you got on under there? Like, what the tooth? Like, does the package look nice? Your booty sit up real high? And I know it's really bad for all me to say that.
Can I just mention that, I don't know if you watched Shaws of Sunset on Bravo, but MJ.
I cannot take the gay one. Like, he gets on my nerves completely.
I know, but that's why I like him, because he's, you know, he's so pretentious and annoying and fat.
he's like that really thick guy at a gym who's always working out, but you've never seen a result. But like,
don't you love that?
Baby, if you think just be thick and just enjoy your thickness, you know what I'm saying? I like thick men. I like little healthy brother. I'm not. If you're gonna be thick and love it, but don't see it go to the gym. And do cardio all day, then go home, eat a whole thing of like bread and cheese, and go, oh, I've been working out.
A former Facebook friend of mine that I was just thinking the other day, I was like, I've watched this person do selfies in the gym for the last 5 years, and they look exactly the same as they have before. And I hardly go and work out in my house and have better results than that. I'm not going to call any names. But listen, MJ, I know, it would be nice. MJ described her boyfriend, and she literally said that they were doing online dating, and I think it was a blind date or something like that. He got out of the car, and he was wearing gray sweatpants, and this is just how she started off a description. And she said his erection went this way, and we went on, you know, we eventually went into the restaurant, and because I didn't take off and run when I saw said erection, must have meant that we were meant to be. So apparently, the power of the sweatpants. You're definitely right on that.
Sweatpants, like I'm telling you, wear a proper pair of sweatpants.
And I guarantee you, if he had worn slacks, she probably wouldn't be with him today.
Maybe,
you know,
who knows? But
I knew what he was doing.
The sweatpants are the male equivalent of the sundress or the leggings. It is the male equivalent. You walk around in sweatpants, I'm going to look at you, and I don't care how. I don't care if you're with your girl or all your kids. I'm gonna look at you, and you gonna have to just deal with it. I'm sorry. I like a man in a nice pair of sweatpants. Now,
would you disrespect your president, Mr. Barack Obama, with those
if
on?
If Barack Obama walked out from sweatpants. I'm sorry. Hey, Barack. Excuse me, Secret Service. Secret Service, you're in my way. I'm trying to talk to our president. You're in my way.
Here we go. Michelle. You know, and you're from Baltimore, so you should know better than to be messing with the police like that.
No.
Stop resisting. Stop resisting. Stop resisting.
I love my Baltimoreans. I am not from Baltimore. I'm from PG County and part of DC area. That is it. I'm not from Baltimore. That's no shade to my Baltimoreans. I love y'all to death, but we all know that Washingtonians do not like being called Baltimoreans. Just do not. I grew up in PG County and spent many of summers in Southeast. I know nothing about Baltimore. Except what they got. Oh, that's inappropriate. But go ahead.
You're right. I messed that one up. Okay. I know. I saw that you were just like, I mean, from like the first 48 hours of you being down there, you didn't seem, I mean, you just weren't all that much into it other than the house shopping, of course. You know, I mean, who doesn't like house shopping with a top down? I remember that.
Yeah.
But beyond that, you were like, oh, I don't know if I could take it.
It was, you know what's so funny about Atlanta? The thing is, it's gorgeous. It's affordable. A lot of big companies down there. Great place to live. It just mixing with the people didn't work very well for me. I found that people who were Native Atlantans or relocated from the North were awesome. They were all dope. They were all so cool. But the ones that were from the South who have never left the South and moved to Atlanta because it's the big city of the South, they just had this really remedial mentality that I just could not
stop. Oh, those who relocated to Atlanta?
Yeah, they're like from from bumfuck Mississippi, and then they moved to Atlanta. It just didn't translate. But now
look at where they came from.
Oh my god! So I had my experience. I was like, well,
it was the next biggest city.
Sidebar.
Yeah. I was asked to move to Kentucky when I was 21. To be a manager at this tech support company. They couldn't even get me to go there for the weekend to train them. That's how bad it was. Like, these people, their last jobs was at Walmart, and then suddenly you're hiring them to do tech support. I refused. And I actually voluntarily, at the beginning of the recession, voluntarily decided to be unemployed to go elsewhere. Because I said, I can't do it. I'm a city slicker, as I get described by my my country or rural Republican friends.
Right.
What am I going to do? You know, what am I going to do? A black gay man, mind you, who had a perm in his head and about six different shades of brown highlights in his head. What was I going to do in Kentucky? By the way,
you would have went there and shaped and molded those people to be awesome and amazing.
I could have. These days I've worked with like the 1% down to the other side, the other 1%. So I pride myself in being able to deal with anyone, but at the time I was 21. Like, I was supposed to be having fun. What the hell?
Yeah, true, true.
But I understand what it's like having to deal with that population, and DC is kind of the same way. There's a huge professional class here, but I have a hard time. I try not to be classist, but dealing with many of the natives, some of the stuff these people propose, and you know, I will never forget the guy who said, you know, we should be able to live in the neighborhood that we grew up in, or be able to purchase in the neighborhood I grew up in. I'm like, you're 30, and you think that you just have a right to afford an area? You know, the prices have changed over the last 20 years. Like, that's stupid. That doesn't make any economic sense, idiot. How did you get elected? So I really have that problem even here, but I was kind of jealous. I kind of wanted to. I've considered Atlanta, possibly. I don't know. I might. That might be on my to-do list. Maybe for a year.
It's not horrible. I will tell you, it's not horrible at all. But my thing is that you have to know how to work the social structures, and sadly, sometimes it requires you to be very inauthentic and fake. It's just not who I am at this stage in my life. It's just not. And it didn't work on a lot of levels. But the thing is that I left Atlanta because my partner got a better job opportunity. I didn't leave Atlanta because I just couldn't handle it. I just gave up. But we left because he had a better opportunity.
I assumed as much. That was kind of quick. Well, congratulations on
you
two moving on up.
Yeah, it's not linear. It's an upward movement. So It was a great thing for my partner because it's something that he really wants to do, and he supported my vision of me going to Atlanta and pursuing my thing with blogging and networking and pursuing his professional goals and what he wants to give and take. But Atlanta's not horrible. It's just that when you deal with the people, you have to really be quick and leave them out because it's just really – that whole like Southern hospitality thing is bullshit. It's basically me talking behind your back and tell you bless your heart to your face because you're a fucking idiot. So – I'm sorry. I really keep that.
Right. And so listen, we were talking about dealing with different classes of people. Reality star Bethany Frankel, she was alleged to, while speaking as the keynote speaker at the Rent the Runway and UBS's Project Entrepreneur Women's Summit, while giving her speech, she allegedly said that black women should have white men be the face of their business. This came from a random non-name audience member whose tweets went on to make the Huffington Post and other news outlets. There were other reports that said that the remarks weren't made,
But hypothetically, let's just discuss whether or not that would be good advice for to be told as a minority to promote your business and have as widespread of an audience as possible, that if you must have, if you have a choice of the person who's going to go out and represent the company, that it should be a white male. What do you say?
Bethany Love, sweetheart. And my thing is that, oh God, that's such a horrible thing to say, and it's like saying, well, it's like anybody else isn't good enough, and that's just like, this is my business, and my thing is, I don't care if you're a black woman running a business and you want an Asian person or Hispanic person or, you know, somebody Middle Eastern to be the face of your company, somebody racially ambiguous. You know, it doesn't really matter, but I think that when you put the emphasis that basically it's subtext. It's like you're basically saying, okay, you're not beautiful enough or you're not great enough to be the face of your company, so whiteness is the best way to make your company look great, and that's how you're going to win. And sadly, we have a culture where, and it's so funny, in social media, I see this all the time, where you have, like, you know, I'll say specifically. On Vine, you'll see a black viner who's great, who's awesome, does all these things. I'll say King Batch. King Batch does a lot of amazing things, but...
Well, I've been pronouncing his name wrong all this time? Okay, carry on.
Yeah, it's short for King Bachelor, but King Batch is amazing, and the stuff that he does, I don't really... His work is all around interesting, but he does a lot of great things. But you got Nash Greer, who not only copies other people's work usually, but this fool has 5 times more followers than him. And King Batch is putting out original work usually. He also has original work, and you know he's made it on TV, he's made it on movies. He's done a lot of, like, he's awesome. Like, I respect the man's career deeply, but it's for some reason in society, and this goes to another topic, that people are always talking about how black folks need to stop supporting white artists like Adele. The problem isn't that we're supporting Adele. The problem is that white audiences aren't supporting Legacy. That's the problem.
I'm glad you mentioned King Bash, because I actually just saw an article within the last week or so that mentioned how he turned Vine into $1 million franchise or $1 million business. So I'm certain that he's not doing as well as Nash is. But, you know, by social media standards, $1 million business isn't so bad. I know that I don't follow him that much, but I know that I saw him. He was invited to the White House, and he did, you know, some videos and selfies with Michelle Obama.
Right.
And he went back to the charter school that he went to meet the kids and things like that. And I feel like it kind of goes back to the we have to work twice as hard to be half as good type of thing. And there's so many speeches that people give and say it's just not fair. We're going to stop this. Well, I mean, some things are life, and it isn't. It's not fair. I mean, the more that you keep drilling it into people's heads, they're going to give up because they just feel like the odds are stacked up against them, which is kind of my whole political spiel of when you are constantly preaching down at folks and saying what you can't do and, you know, look at these horrible odds stacked against you, it leads to despondency where people, they just ultimately give up. And at the end of the day, they have their handout. But I'll say this, as for whether or not to have a white male as the face of your business, I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs, and one of the things that I had heard my aunt say in the 90s all the time was she never had a face on her business card. You know, none of us really have, you know, one of those Watermelandria names, as Raven Simone mentioned, while having the absolute, you know, spoken while having the absolute most ghetto hairstyle on daytime television. Hypocrite. But she didn't put a face on her cards because she said that kind of immediately pigeonholed you business-wise. And that was kind of something that I carried on to in business years ago. You know, Giovanni is not my legal name. I actually have a pretty white name.
Right.
And it wouldn't show up I wouldn't show up in Google results anyway, which is really the reason why I came up with another pseudonym.
Amen. I did the same.
So, with that being said, I understand that, from that standpoint. I mean, but at least she was promoting to not have, kind of not having anyone, like, out front, or at least not a black person. I mean, it's an uncomfortable fact that kind of is what it is. But I kind of feel like Bethany is kind of technically a minority as a woman.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'll say by definition of affirmative action, which is benefited white women more, by that definition than she sort of is. But I could understand her saying at least the statement of a white man being in front is going to do better. Like, if you were to say that, like, that is kind of a fact, and that's not really going to be argued. But to suggest that, okay, pick this person to go in front, you're going to rub people the wrong way. I don't think I would want to be caught on film or whatever with that sound bite coming
right
from my name. But given the person who made the statement, notice it's not on film, and we're in a seriously racially sensitive moment in history. So people are being offended by everything, and they're exaggerating. I think that there could be some type of exaggeration. I don't quite see Bethany saying something like that. I would hope not. She's a very successful woman. It has a great, backstory of going, from being a wife to the successful entrepreneur. But, you might want to get out of the business of telling black people what to do.
I think this is a lot of problems that white Americans need to accept and accept. Is the fact that you may not be saying it with the intention of it being racially, culturally, or minority insensitive, but if you are not versed in somebody else's culture and understand what they may deal with, I just suggest, like I said before, just don't talk about other minority groups that you're not a minority group on. And it's so funny because it's just, like LaPortia, she may not have had malicious intent. I'm not really sure. LaPortia, I feel like Bethany didn't have malicious intent. But I'm not sure if Bethany had malicious intent in saying so. But it's not even just disrespectful to women of color. It's disrespectful to women in general, who make up the majority of the world's population and are only seen as a minority because of their juxtaposition to men.
Well, it's kind of offensive to black people, period, because you're saying that I should put someone else as a face of my business. And I hate being told what to do with my company. I'll probably repeat that like three times a day.
The statement wasn't pro-woman either. Like, this is like, you're a woman and you're always going to need a man to help. And I'm just like, it's just, girl, shut up. Just shut up. Just don't say anything. Like you're putting your entire mouth and you're shitting toenails right now.
And as I said about, my aunt mentioning, not putting her face on things, which I can understand, and I do think that is a smart business move, but twice as hard to be half as good argument. That's just a fact. That's what we have to deal with, unfortunately. But given that, I hardly talk about being gay, but I feel like it's an elephant in the room. Like, it has to be addressed every so often. I don't want to appear to be hiding anything. I don't appear to be straight at all, but I'm just not someone who carries the heart on their sleeve. So occasionally I will have the discussion just for the sake of it, just for disclosure's sake. But I am aware that in doing that I am potentially painting myself into a corner. But as long as you know that you're putting yourself in this corner, be aware that you're going to have to be working pretty damn hard to get your ass up out of that corner at the same time. So I know putting my face on stuff and, you know, political stance especially, I'm a conservative in D.C. That's, you know, there's just not many, you know, we're joked about being five in a phone booth. That's really making life tough. But as long as I know where I am and what my business strategy is, then I know that I'll be fine and successful. And I tell anyone who has any type of business endeavors or ventures that they may feel like the odds are stacked against them or that it's impossible. Nothing's impossible. If you want to do something, do it. You just find a way to make money at it and to be happy doing what you love. And don't be told by anyone that you're not good enough to front your own business. And what do you know? Bethany is on television right now on Bravo. Don't let anyone tell you you can't do it or that you're not good enough to be the face. Find a way to make it happen.
I have to say about that. I think for me, I didn't change. I think I changed why I used my moniker, my pseudonym, because professionally, I didn't know where I would go as Ron Clever, and I didn't want to block what I do professionally as Henry. So it was a situation where I had to make a choice. So I chose to use the moniker until I may blow up one day and I just get rid of Ron and make it just Clever, or, you know, whatever. Or I just stay by Ron Clever. Who knows? But I feel like I think us not showing our faces as gay people, as black people, as women, as Latinos, as Muslims, as whatever ethnic minority or religious group we're a part of, doesn't change the narrative. It doesn't really remove the problem of white privilege that we have in the United States. So it's like, for me, I don't want to hide my blackness and not show it. And this makes it very clear. I don't judge people who decide to make that choice. That's what you choose to do. That's how you choose to sleep at night. It is not my place to tell you how to sleep at night. But for me, it doesn't remove the narrative. And it doesn't change the narrative by me hiding out. I support people who want to be out there and show their faces and do all that. I support people who don't want to show their faces. It's all of what you can handle and what you're willing to deal with. And if you can handle whatever positive or negative effects come from the decision that you made. So
it's always good to be able to say that you are the exception to the rule, that you made it in business and successful but as a minority. And that's kind of what I strive to do, taking the impossible and making it possible.
Exactly. And that's the thing that I think for me, if I never become a all-around success and a brand and, you know, something amazing from being around.
But you can't say that. You have to say that you are. Like, you have to, you know, talk yourself into it.
Okay, let me rephrase it. When I become a media mogul and the face of wet lubricant and the face of elbow lubricant, I will be happy to know that I live my life completely authentically and the speed that I can only handle. But that's how I really feel. Like, I don't want to regret the processes that I went through to where I've been. Like, even like right now, I've taken a very serious hiatus from blogging and all the things, because it's really needed to just, you know, just sit back and just sit still and watch stuff for a little bit and just see what's going on and then come back and, hey, have new ideas, new stories, new things. But I just really like,
don't sit too far. I did one of those sitting moments and I was away from media for almost 5 years.
No.
I had a very tough crash course very early on as a teenager. I didn't want to be around singers or anything for a number of years. Listen, you people are crazy.
I'm a little bit over a year now, and I'm like really starting to feel bad about it. But I've been actually more active on social media lately because I'm up to.
But you gotta find the balance.
Yeah, you have to.
Look, it's the same thing with radio for me. I actually really don't like being on air, but I'm stepping out of my comfort zone for for a number of things.
Right.
You know, from speaking, you know, public speaking, et cetera. Because, I mean, hey, you're not going to grow if you don't do that. And secondly, like, do it, period. Don't think about the what or how or when will I have the time. Do it. Like, my thing about the show was that it's going to happen at least once a week. There will be a show. It doesn't matter if people die. It doesn't matter if, you know, your business goes belly up, if you become unemployed. The show will happen, period. Period.
Right.
It, you know, I've gotten rid of folks, the same person. I just got rid of twice in the month. I think this one will be the final time. But it's going to happen, period. And I'm super I've definitely overexerted myself schedule-wise. But, yeah, you know, you've got the gift. Just, make sure that you adhere to it.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Exactly.
Don't take too long.
Right. Right now.
And moving along, here's an interesting one. The inevitable argument about who can and cannot say the N-word has made headlines yet again when rapper Travis Scott used his opening performance for Rihanna's Anti-Tour to hold his mic out and have a white audience member recite a lyric with the N-word in it. The line he repeated was, "Only trill niggas know." Travis went on to say, "This makes me want to cry. A lot of years ago, nobody ever wanted to see this happen." Now, I'm just going to say this. First, I think it was disrespectful to use someone else's show to make a political statement, and I'm going to leave my adjective out of that. You can do that on your own show now. But secondly, if the boy had gotten jumped or a bottle cracked over his head for that, it would have been your fault for starting it. Not to mention the boy who's dumb enough to do it, because I'd be, you know, I can't speak on the white experience, but if you pitted me in a situation like that, a room for black people, and you're trying to get me to say the N-word, absolutely not. Nope, not today.
Right.
You're not endangering my life, because I just pictured, like, a riot could have happened or something there. I don't know.
Right.
That could have turned really wrong. Very fast. What do you think?
So, like, I just feel like, and it's so funny that I watched a clip about it over there. I think it was from CNN, but Mark Lamont Hill was talking about the N-word and using it, and that he acknowledged that he feels like if I say to another black person, "my nigga," or "what's up, nigga," or "what's wrong," or whatever, "nigga," or something, it's like, I feel like me saying it, and like he has said, that it's, we both understand the same experience. It is something that is emotionally connective between black Americans, because we experience, you know, the worst of that word. Our ancestors did. So for me, it's just like, if somebody uses the N-word, it doesn't bother me, it doesn't affect me, you know, and it's cool. Now, when it comes down to my Caucasians using the word,
I'm going
like,
beyond that time.
Like,
go ahead.
And like, Mark Lamont Hill said, white people, why do you so need to say that word? Saying the word does not validate your existence. It doesn't make you better. It doesn't make you closer to the black experience. It doesn't do anything for you.
But you know what the argument is? They say that because we say it. And it's like, I feel like it's a never-ending argument. We're not going to win it. And this, I hear this quite a bit. They say, but you do it all the time. I don't think that they should use it, but at the same time, hey, I'm neutral. I don't really use it at all. I had to say really, really, because I just made a joke with a neighbor yesterday. You know, it's double standard of life. You know, we say they shouldn't use it, and then
I think the term black privilege.
The term black privilege gets used or brought up, whereby it's like we can say things that they can't. And so my thing is, for argument's sake, to be safe, I don't use it at all. And so nobody can hold that argument with me about who can and can't, because I just don't participate in it.
I think it's highly childish to keep saying that whole, well, they can say it, why can't we say it? Mommy, the black people are saying nigga, why can't we say it?
And you can also get knocked upside the head for it, too, can you not? Well, you can use it. But I believe, but, you know, I want to be on their side. You're right. We do. And you know what? If you want to use a word, this is a free country, you can use it. Okay, now, I already told you I don't think it's a good idea for you to use it. Now, if you want to use it, just beware of what happens next. It's a freedom of speech thing that we were talking about. It's a huge topic of discussion, this presidential election, about, like Donald Trump said, that freedom of speech is going to be the death of this country. And I arguably kind of agree. However, there are rules to speaking in public. It just is what it is. And you know, the people who were not seasoned politicians had huge issues with the media because they're not, well, minus the woman from HP, Carly Fiorina, because she used to speaking to folks. They're not media trained, so they don't know how to deal with the media. So, yes, you're going to get it every time you open your mouth. Because you don't know the rules. It's life. There are rules. Donald Trump, the same thing with the delegate argument now. He's like, oh, first he was like, I don't follow rules. Okay, all right then. And that'll probably be the reason why you lose, because you don't follow rules. All right? Rules exist. You can't say whatever you want out of your mouth and expect nothing to happen in consequence. So, yes, at the end of the day, we all can use the word. All right? Now, if someone wants to look at you and say you're an ignorant ass for using it, which is kind of unfortunate people do, then, okay, that's one consequence. Then you have the other consequence of, you know, by the way, I worked in mental health briefly for like a couple of years, and we had a white consumer or client who walked outside one day, and he told them, he said, what are you all doing outside on the corner? You quote unquote, niggas need to go back on the slave boat. And he couldn't even go home to his apartment because they beat him senseless. He would go sleep in the park.
Oh, my God.
Freedom of speech. Hey, you think they need to get off the corner and get on a boat and go somewhere? I'm sure there are black people that agree with you, okay? But look, you saw what happened for making the statement, consequences to our words.
Right. And I think what usually always happens when white folks, you know, I want to get to the debate of that they can or can't use it. The three things they always say, well, they use it, why can't we use it? Or black privilege, which I've heard that too. Or they'll say, well, y'all call us crackers and saltines at home.
I don't.
And why
you can't say
it?
I do it.
But the problem is, it's so funny, I won't use those kind of words in regards to white people. I won't even use words negatively that have negative connotation towards. I don't like even using the word bitch in social media when it refers to a female. I just don't. But for me, like, I have my own check and balance on myself, but I just feel like, and honky and saltine does not have the same historical implications as the word nigga does. Let it go, white people. You're not going to be able to say that. It's not happening. We're not, until we got 50 years in the future and we also racially mix and we don't know who's who anymore, then we get a conversation then. But right now, it's not happening. It's not on the table. It's so far from the table. Like there's so many other.
Hey, I fear. Yeah. Look, you mentioned those 50 years from now. I fear that we might. What state? What was that bombing? The Oklahoma bombing, I think, where the successful black neighborhood just got bombed just for the sake of it, just for being successful. Shouldn't talk like that. I feel like before the moment comes, there are some people who would rather, you know, decimate black neighborhoods by carpet bombing them before they see us get to that type of racial
well,
mixing.
It's sad part.
So it's just my random thought. I'm sorry.
Decimating black communities has happened several times in American history. It never spoke of between Black Wall Street. I think I was in Oklahoma. I might be wrong, but I'll focus on that. Then they had the thing in Pennsylvania with the black community that they literally dropped bombs on, and people have no idea about Seneca Village, which was a black community that was in Central Park that no longer existed. And
in Central Park, just imagine that.
Exactly. So removing black neighborhoods that are doing well is really much part of the American dream. It's part of the process of America, and it's really unfortunate.
Well, I will say this. This is why I support the Second Amendment for all. The amendment, right? that's why, okay? The next time you want to pull something like that, yes, we should have, we need to have guns. All of
it. You know, it's so funny that when we pull guns, it's a different situation when white folks pull guns. And it's just like, as a black person, especially coming from the South, gun culture is really weird in the South. It's very weird. It's very, very weird. But it's like when black folks are not allowed to bear arms, but white folks are allowed to bear arms. Because, you know, that's part of patriotism and the white experience in America. And it's really weird. It's one of those things where I just, like, I don't – when it comes down to the issues between whites and blacks, I think – there's far-reaching issues than just the N-word. Like,
I mean, I'll just say that we're looked at differently when carrying guns. But I mean, there's no law specifically black people having guns. But I say that for areas where it's for areas where it's legal, that more of us should, you know, participate in said law to balance things out. And many of the liberal areas where black crime is so bad, such as in D.C., for the longest, it we couldn't have guns outside. In neighborhoods like Congress Heights, you should be required to own a gun to live there.
I have the
D.C. police tweets notifications on my phone. So I see every time something happens, and it's all this stuff going on over there, you should be able to have guns maybe not open carry, conceal carry at least.
Well, the brass tax for black people is much different than the tax that white folks have to deal with. And also, one thing which is, even though, like, I'm very anti-gun, so I'm just like, I'm not even for the lifestyle.
I've never owned one, but I at least, and I haven't been around that culture. You beat me. You're further than me. But all I'm saying is I support those who want to own them and use them responsibly. I mean, I don't want an outbreak of, you know, unnecessary standing your grounds, but I do support those who want to have them. As I said, just certain areas I don't know if I could live in, like, Congress Heights and, like, not own one.
We know what's up. Like, the crime rate in D.C. doesn't rank in the top 10. Atlanta's actually in the top 10. Atlanta's actually number 9.
I didn't know that. I mean, so even with the 40% hike in a year, it doesn't rank.
D.C. does not rank. Actually, Atlanta ranks, which is the crazy part. And the things are funny.
Well,
bad enough. To talk about this is that the news, the local news is much different up here than it is down there. When you watch the news down in Atlanta, it's always a shooting. Someone always got killed. Someone always got robbed at gunpoint. It's like the crime in Atlanta around guns, because they have open carry, it's insane. But when you're up here, you watch the news, it's strangely refreshing. Like, you don't see people. This is why I think we need to really enforce better gun legislature, because the news is totally different. It's like, just from being in one place for 10 months and coming here, been here all my life, they didn't notice it before until I got back. The news up here is so refreshing to watch. Like, watching the news in Atlanta makes you want to switch your fucking wrist. Because somebody's always getting killed. And I didn't want to talk about Georgia has the highest car fatality rate in the country. People die.
I didn't know,
like, are you watching news? Like last year in Georgia, they had over 2,500 car deaths in Atlanta. In Georgia. They had 2,500 car deaths.
Well, I want to say, in comparison, at least, I mean, the city of Atlanta is huge, for one. I know the population difference is, I mean, it's like a huge population difference.
Right. But that's a lot of people killed. A lot of people get killed. And before we left, it was over 300. Like, before we left, like, basically, you're telling me that in Atlanta, every 3 days, well, every day, three people die in a car accident.
Well, I'll say this. I discussed this on another show. Chicago is up to, I believe it was 700 shootings so far in April. It's up at least double, I think, from last year, this time last year.
There's so many factors. They say that you can commit felonies and all these other things and like be immediately released. Like these people who are being arrested, it's like, you know, one person had been arrested, was it a few dozen times or something, and like the number of times he had been, you know, arrested and let go, it's like, shouldn't you be in a halfway house or like under supervision? Or something like they're not charging people there, and it's like a lack of prosecution there. Like they didn't have enough prosecutors there. I heard.
There are major. I feel like there are major issues in general with gun culture in the United States, and I feel like we need to really like gun culture, the prison system. We have to get away from a lot of these things because they are systemically creating a problem. But, you know, I'm not a politician. I don't plan on being one. But I'm just
saying. Yeah, it's, you know, that might be on my bucket list, you know, to at least run a campaign, at least for maybe an easy office. I don't know. Just to say I did. Who knows? Don't quote me on it. So I wanted to close out with a pretty fun story.
Come on, Fox Story.
I know. Now if I can see, I mean, did I just drink all this coffee and I like can't find it? So Game of Thrones actress Emilia Clarke, who plays Princess Daenerys Targaryen, is on a campaign for more male nudity in film. She says that television should not mean more female nudity, but male nudity. I have a bit of an idea of where this discussion is going to go, considering we have two gay men on this show today.
Of course.
But how do you feel about more male nudity on the big screen?
I'm for it, and I said what I said, and that's it. I said what I said, and y'all need to deal with it. I think
come on,
really help the balance of sexualizing men and desexualizing women. Growing up in the 80s, you always saw breasts or vaginas at some point in the 80s movies. You always came across one or two. It just happened that way, but you never, ever got to see a penis. The only time in a movie that I saw a penis, and I was so confused, was when I watched
Come on, I've got my pen. Okay.
When I watched Baby Night, and what's his name? Mark Wahlberg put out his penis, and went, I am a star. And I'm pretty sure his penis is not that big. It probably was a fake penis. But when I tell you, like, my spirit leapt out of my body to that screen is like, Mark Wahlberg, when are we going to do this? When are we going to get together and find love and make mixed babies together? But like, I feel like you don't see it enough, especially with shows like Spartacus and Game of Thrones. And like, I really would love to see more penis on a screen. It's like, and I just would. I'm the only fan.
Can I tell you what my response was to him saying, I am a star? I was like, I think I was just nodding my head, and I said, yes, Mark,
yeah.
You are a star.
You are a star.
I mean, it, you know, that almost sounds like, you know, bedroom language, like during the act.
Sure.
Yes, you're a star. Yes, like sleeping with your talent agent. Yes, you are a star. Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it feels like.
Speaking of which, a big story. Did you see that music video that some model did? I forgot his name. Where it was like from the waist up and towards, he was on a beach and it was slow motion. It was waist up and then it slowly dropped towards the end and he had like.
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, what was that about? I mean, did is there a follow up to this? To like, I don't have words here. And I thought, listen, I was like showering or something, you know, and like I'm getting dressed and I'm like, I'm flipping through my phone early in the morning to decide on whether to send out stories to my writers or whatever to contemplate. And I saw that and I was like, what? And so for our listeners, I can't think of his name, but a major albino model.
Sean is Sean something. It's Sean something.
Yeah.
And oh my God.
I think that there was an elephant transplant going on there. It was totally unexpected, and I don't really have. I think I've lost the topic.
His name is Sean Ross. That's his name, Sean Ross. And when I tell you, I saw that video, I was like, I'm gonna be very honest, America. I'm a size queen, so you know, like you put a dick on the screen for me ain't really move me unless it's really big. So I bought it. I was like, let me see this old little penis and get this all over with and go about my damn day. Baby, when that water moved and that big baby's arm holding the apple of a penis flopped, I said, Jesus. I said, that man almost made me follow him on Twitter.
Now, my second response was, we actually have the same legal last name. And I said, there you go, Sean. I knew it runs in the family.
Mm-hmm. Lord have mercy, that thing. I was like,
oh. Now look, personally, I think that if we did have more male nudity, it would make dating a lot easier. You can skip the whole sharing nudes thing, and choosing a partner would be a lot easier later. Just kidding, of course. Of course, I don't participate in such behavior, darling. But and look, last year, Kevin Bacon was promoting a film. I forgot what it was. And he did a public service announcement, a video PSA, saying that we need to, what he called hashtag, free the bacon. And this is what he had to say about it. In so many films and TV shows, we see gratuitous female nudity, and it's not okay. Well, it's okay, but it's not fair to actresses, and it's not fair to actors because we want to be naked too, he says to the camera. Gentlemen, it's time to free the bacon.
It is.
For Kevin to be he's 57 years old, all right? A little bit old to be going nude, but I'll say this. If he can pull off a good sizable frontal scene, it just might be worth it.
I think you can just show it anyway. I don't care what's going on in your life. I think you should just show it so I know what to look forward to. But I don't know what is this thing about that is so bad to see, but I can look at breasts and vaginas all day. I just understand, like, just show me the penis.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, but, you know, when it comes to equality, men and women are not equal. I mean, they have a vagina. So I think that in and of itself kind of proves the point, you know, in physicality, et cetera, with strength. But women have two sets of private parts versus our one. So they can do like a half thing, which is usually the case for a film, whereas, you know, it's like we show it, like that's just the end of it. So it's a little different. It's, you know, it's kind of an all or nothing. But I'll say this is kind of how we deal with equality. You know, Donald Trump kind of balances out many of his statements, such as my all-time favorite of, you know, Megyn Kelly having, you know, I could see blood in her eyes and blood coming from her wherever. These statements by, you know, that's really not all that great to say, but he has a history of having women in executive positions for decades as well. So that's kind of a big thing. You know, it's all this discussion about women being promoted, and this man has actually done it, and far before many others ever had the idea. So if you want to see changes, the same thing with like Oscar So White, then we have to be more involved. If women want to see more more penises on screen, if that's what you all want, then I suggest that you work on moving up the ranks in production and in film and make it happen. I mean, it's the upper echelon who makes these decisions. So, yeah,
right.
Get on up there. And if you can get a sizable number of you all, we just might see that sometime soon. That's kind of how we balance things out. You've got to get up to the decision making arena to be able to see changes. I mean, all the protests and all of the hashtag bring out the penis, et cetera, whatever, isn't going to cut it.
Right. I mean, but I explain to people that with any movement or anything that involves social change, that it has to be hit on multiple fronts. You just can't just protest. Such as that's great and it's appreciated, but other things that we do legally and, you know, social media, it has to be a lot of stuff done for stuff to change in my
opinion. Now, can I say this, you know, this whole, you know, free the bacon, free the penis thing, like, this is a big deal. Like, we've dealt with this for decades. So, like, can we... God don't get me for it. Can we, like, take this a little more seriously, you know? Like, light a match to something for it? I mean, you know, don't burn down a building. Like, you know, burn trash cans or something. You know, bring out some movies with female nudity and burn them in the street. Okay, we need to bring attention to this cause. Come on, Kevin Bacon.
Right.
Maybe I'll write him an open letter. That'll be a nice little project. It can be from the bottom.
We need to get them together. Like, y'all need to sit here and talk me the bird campaign that we have going on here.
Yes.
You know, you get it moving. It's, you know, this is... I don't know when nudity became so taboo. I mean, I was born into taboo nudity, but I don't understand why nudity is so taboo. I just don't get it.
Hey, look, I grew up... Like, when I came to D.C., I moved to the area with my aunt from here in the D.C. area, where I was previously living with my grandparents in Georgia. And I was a pretty stuffy child. Like, I had to be told when I came here to take my shoes off in the house. Like, why are you walking around in shoes all day long? You know, I was the one that you had to be told to unbutton the top button. all of those things. So, so definitely the nudity was definitely taboo. Like I said, I mean, mm-hmm. I still struggle with, I hardly walk around without anything on now. It's like, heard of.
Right.
I mean, something I'm still warming up to.
Yeah.
And so look, so it was fun having a handsome guest today, Rod.
Thank you. I try.
You're welcome. This was the second week in a row. I really don't, to be honest, I don't know if I have that many attractive friends to keep this streak going. Yeah. But I want to thank you for joining today. It was a pleasure.
I loved it. It was awesome.
Yes. And unfortunately, I didn't get to have my my other... guest on. He used to be a blogger. He was someone that I followed a few years back, and I was told that he had a very good radio voice. Guess I didn't get a chance to hear it today, maybe later. but this show is brought to you by our parent company, VM3 Media, your destination for all your communication and media consulting needs. And until next time, we're airing each and every Sunday live at 3 p.m. Eastern. And go to popglitz.com for the latest in celebrity news. Bye, guys.